Everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on KU Band Radio at Telstar 5, 7 days a week on Truth Radio Network, and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on organic, right after this. You know, during the 1970s, an obscure black college professor down at Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, while working on a grant, developed a unique marketing plan for agricultural products. His plan was aimed at poor, rural, black landowners in the South who owned small acreages. The goal was to keep these landowners on the land by producing produce for sale to the public at the retail price and to generate an income that would support a family. It was called the Whatley Program. And the Whatley Program was so successful that it became known as the Whatley Program, how to make $100,000 per year on 25 acres or less. Now, that fellow was Booker T. Whatley. Now, there are more than 4,000 of these small family enterprises operating in the United States. And the law school has taken the Whatley Program and added the 15 agricultural laws of the Bible and the 17 financial laws from Scripture so that you can practice all of the laws of the United States, all of the laws of your state, and all of the laws of the Scripture, and make a good living for you and your family at the same time. Now, if you'd like to learn more about this program, how to make $100,000 on 25 acres or less and do it scripturally, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free of charge. And that's the place to start. You can call right now. The number is 417-273-4967. And my $100,000 class is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, why don't you go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email. Send me an email request for your free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org. Or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about why go organic. Why would you want to buy organic produce or to go organic and use organic underarm deodorant as opposed to Arid Extra Dry? And I showed you a few of the questions and answers. Let me cover a couple more of these questions and answers concerning organic. And I think you'll see the reason, the logic, and the common sense that goes with this whole concept. Organic is actually scriptural. Organic follows the biblical principles, although it doesn't follow all of the biblical principles. There are 15 agricultural laws that are outlined in the Scripture, and organic follows most of them. There's one thing that the organic growers still aren't doing, and that's letting the land rest once every 7 years and once every 49 years. Land Sabbaths and Jubilees. I don't know of anybody that does that except the Gordons here, but there's probably a few people around the world that still do that or do it, period. But the point I'm making is that it's better than nothing. It's a whole lot better than chemicals and poisons being sprayed on the land and on the produce. Now, here's a question. Can I possibly get salmonella from an organic egg? You know, people are concerned about salmonella bacteria, and you ought to be. There is always the possibility that foodborne illnesses can be transmitted by handling. But organically formed or farmed eggs are pretty much guaranteed to be free of salmonella. The reason is that the cramped, unhygienic conditions in which battery hens are raised form a breeding ground for diseases like salmonella. Organic hens are raised very differently, and their food does not contain any animal wastes, growth-promoting agents, or anything containing genetically modified ingredients. Notice the term, their food does not contain any animal wastes. Let me tell you something about animal waste. They're taking chicken manure because they find that the chicken manure contains protein. Then they dry it, and then they feed it to dairy cattle. Now, of course, they're not feeding 100%. For instance, they'll take chicken manure, dry it, grind it up, mix that with animal protein, you know, like the guts and hair and hide and other body parts of pigs and other animals, and dry those, and then they'll mix that with corn, grind that up, and they'll mix it maybe with wheat or other grains, and they come up with what they call a dairy ration. And they'll put in that dairy ration antibiotics and various other chemicals that stimulate growth or do other things that make this animal produce more milk or do things that it's not naturally designed to do. Now, that's what they're talking about by animal waste. I mean, they feed the manure from one group of animals to another group of animals to squeeze out the last possible dollar. Now, you know, God did not design cows to eat chicken manure. There are animals out there that do that. Now, there are worms and there's bacteria and there's insects that break down these animal wastes in the natural environment. That's what they're designed to do. But corporate agribusiness has come up with some neat ideas, and they say, let's take advantage of these things like chicken manure. And they do, and they cook it real well so that there are no disease pathogens in them. And that's what they've done, and they've created a thing here called a crystal or a prion that causes Jacob's Creutzfeldt disease, which is not affected by heat or autoclaves. In fact, to show you how dangerous this CJ, the Jacob's Creutzfeldt CJD disease is, they did some tests on Alzheimer's patients, and they found that 13% of the Alzheimer's patients that they have CJD disease. And this disease is caused by these things called prions. Prions are not living organisms, they're crystals, and they're deadly. Once they get into your body, we don't know what to do about them. Ordinarily, when you do an autopsy, you finish up with the autopsy and you stick the instruments that you use to cut this cadaver up and examine it. You put them in an autoclave and you heat them up to about 300 degrees and you kill all the bacteria and virus and anything that could be living. You kill it, destroy it. Prions are not affected at least up to 700 degrees. Evidently, 700 degrees is the melting point of lead. Evidently, these prions in a crystal form, it's like a crystal is a rock. It's a rock with a particular molecular structure to it that invades your body and causes your body or your immune system to work against itself and it kills you. Well, these doctors, when they're cutting open a cadaver and they think that there might be CJD in this cadaver, they wear mail chain gloves. They dress in moon suits and wear helmets so that no part of that cadaver can touch their bodies. And then they take the instruments that they cut it up with and throw them away or use them only for those kinds of cadavers. They don't use them again for operations. I mean, if they were to take one of these scalpels and it had some of this prion on it, they would spread it to you in an operation cutting out your appendix. I mean, this is something that comes from science fiction. This is something that would be written about and put into a movie called The Twilight Zone or something akin to it, or The Andromeda Strain or something. I mean, it's starting to get pretty wild. And this is another reason why I like the concept of organic. I want to stay as far away from these ideas of modern science, Monsanto, Archer Daniels Midland, ConAgra, the Department of Agriculture, the National Institutes of Health, the FDA. These people are staffed by scientists. They're staffed by bureaucrats and politicians, career people who have been educated in Harvard and Yale and Columbia and the educational institutions to evolutionary philosophy. They believe in what they're doing. And they're experimenting with you and they're experimenting with me. I don't want people experimenting with me and telling me that there's no mad cow disease in the United States. Call it Downer cow syndrome. I think I'll avoid that like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Here's another question. I bought some organic vegetables recently that said permitted pesticides used. Aren't organic foods produced without the use of pesticides? Answer. Well, if a total crop failure threatens, it is not unknown for organic farmers to use pesticides as a last resort. However, only natural pesticides will be permitted by organic certifiers, and these are strictly monitored and based and used under restriction. Botanical pesticides are the kind used, that is, pesticides that are derived from plants, and they can be quickly broken down by sunlight. All right, now, there are some organic pesticides that are organic. In fact, there are a number of ways that we keep insect pests under control, and insect pests are kept under control by what we call companion planting. Companion planting. You can take marigolds and plant them around, or you can put human urine around the edge of a bed, like garlic or something like that, and the deer won't come around it. Generally speaking, we, the guys that are doing this organic, first of all, we know that the insects only eat plants that are sick, and we know that a tomato hornworm only eats tomatoes. If you get an infestation of tomato hornworms, these hornworms will try to eat some of the marginal tomatoes. If your tomatoes are really good, I mean they're really strong, they won't bother them at all. They leave them alone. They avoid them like they taste bad. But if you got marginal and you're in the commercial business, what the organic guys will do, they'll come along with an organic spray and spray those to kill or to dissuade the hornworms from getting on the plants. If it smells bad and tastes bad, the insects will leave it alone. But they're not using chemicals like DDT or organophosphates and others like that. That's the moral of that story. Here's another question. If only a small percentage of farms are organic, how can this way of farming be expected to feed the world? Answer. Well, the idea is that countries around the world adopt organic farming methods and that we do the same at home. The focus will then shift to producing food for domestic use rather than selling it as cheap imports. Organic production is on the increase, and in the UK and in North America, overall demand is growing faster than supply. Not only does this provide opportunities for growth in the home market, but there's a clear need for imports from other countries. Let me point something out here. You know, the world right now is suffering from about 15,000 famine-caused deaths per day. This has been going on as long as I've been around. I can remember when it was 10,000 people were dying a day from famine, and now it's 15. Well, listen, there's no shortage of food in the world. There was never any shortage of food in the Soviet Union. I delivered a set of programs here not too long ago. We're talking about, I was on the editorial review. We were talking about the production, the grain production going on in Ukraine. Shortages of food are caused by political disruptions or by war. Now, when you have a war like Iraq, it disrupts distribution, production, and supply. In the Crimean War in the 1850s, it disrupted the production of grain in what is now known, or what was known, as the Soviet Union. The production of grain shifted to North America, and the process now of a political stability in the Ukraine and Azerbaijan and Uzbekistan and so on, they're now producing more grain around the Black Sea. And as a result of that, there's plenty of grain being produced. In fact, you can produce it cheaper there, and it's cutting into American production and exports. The marketplace will determine what is and what is not grown, what is and what is not sold. There is no shortage of cocaine. There is no shortage of heroin. And the reason for that is that there's a demand for it. As long as there's a demand, somebody somewhere will grow it. And get this, even under such adverse conditions as black helicopters and armed confrontation and financial disincentives, people are still out there producing cocaine and heroin. The same thing is true here. If there's a financial incentive to grow tomatoes, rutabagas, lettuce, carrots, peas, beans, cherries, pears, plums, somebody somewhere is going to produce it. And if the price is high enough, they'll produce it under any kind of adverse circumstance. Now, let's look at this pragmatically. How much land does it take to support a family? And the answer is, you can support a family on a building lot in downtown Cleveland on 2,400 square feet with what's known as the intensive French, it's called the French intensive culture. French intensive culture, pioneered by Rodale in Pennsylvania. The Rodale people actually produced $38,000 worth of produce at retail on one-third of an acre. That's the world record, $38,000 worth of produce. Now, the average family only spends about $6,000 a year in the United States, $6,000 a year on food. Rodale produced six times that amount on one-third of an acre. Now, take 43,560 square feet and just multiply that. That's, say, times 0.33, and that's 14,374 feet. So, in round numbers, it's about 15,000 square feet. 2,400 square feet will support a family of six handily. French intensive culture. It's organic growing to an extreme. In other words, it's where we really get serious about this thing of growing the most on the least. That's better production than any chemical, any Monsanto, any ADM has ever dreamed of producing. When God designed the agricultural system and created it and gave it to us, he gave us a whale of a money-making business or opportunity. Let me tell you something else. What do you think the most profitable business in the world is? Is it banking? Is it insurance? Is it robbery, theft? Is it cocaine or heroin? Think about it now for a minute. The most profitable business that you can get into is agriculture. Agriculture. Now, ask any farmer and he'll tell you, no, agriculture is so poor, so bad, so terrible, so wicked, awful, and evil, I'm going broke. Now, let me show you something here. If you took one kernel of corn, just one kernel of corn, and you planted it in the ground, and you watered it for 120 days, what would be the return that you get on that one kernel of corn? Well, it would grow one stalk. The one stalk would have 2 ears. Each ear would have 16 rows. It would grow 437 kernels. 436 kernels. Give me my numbers here. That's 872, isn't it? 436 and 436. Is that my numbers? Okay, right? 872. Now that's an 87,200% return on your investment. Tell me of another business that has a return of 87,200%. And when you find it, get into it. Meanwhile, agriculture isn't all that shabby. Now only a farmer could take a profit margin of 87,200% and screw it up and go broke. Now there's 17 economic laws in the Bible and 15 agricultural laws, and if you put those two together and you practice them, you'll be making that kind of money. And organic has that kind of money involved. That's why when I tell you that there's $100,000 a year to be made on 25 acres or less, and in some cases people are making $100,000 a year on 3 acres, let me show you how. Raspberries are the most profitable crop, or the most labor-intensive and profitable crop that I know of. And they make about $43,000 an acre. Now take times 3 acres. That's $129,000. 3 acres of raspberries will produce about $100,000 a year or more. Blackberries aren't quite as good. They only produce about $17,000 a year. Blueberries about $8,000 a year. Peaches are $8,000 a year, and so on. Livestock is about $150 an acre per year. Now, do you want to go into the livestock business and raise cows and calves like I do for $150 a year? Do you want to get into raspberries and make $43,000 an acre? These are choices, you know, that you have to make. But don't kid yourself. Agriculture is immensely profitable, and especially when we grow what people want. Now, what's being grown today up in North Dakota is wheat for export to Arabia and Oman and the United Arab Emirates. And now you've got the Russians in here trying to undercut the price that we're charging from ADM and so on, and they want to come in here, undercut the market. Let those guys fight over the wheat market where there's no money anyway. And let's get into something that pays off. Get into something that makes money. Herbs, garlic, row crop, garden vegetables. Those are the things that have the money in them. Those are the things we ought to be growing. And when there's a demand and when there's a price for it, and get this, you know, we're paying right now. Organic food costs about double what you pay in the supermarkets. I one time paid $3.95 for a dozen organic eggs in January in Memphis, Tennessee, in a health food store. Eggs are hard to come by in January. Organic eggs are hard to come by. Chemical eggs, yeah, they've got those. But fresh eggs in January, you don't have very many of those, and they cost a lot more to produce. Now, when people are willing to pay $4 a dozen for eggs, let me assure you that there will be no shortage of organic eggs at $4 a dozen. I think that that for $2 a dozen, we can get lots of organic eggs. And as more people put more demand on the marketing system and there's more profit to be made, you'll find more people are willing to work at it. Nobody's going to work to produce wheat at $3.50 a bushel. But I can guarantee you there's a lot of people that will work for raspberries at $43,000 an acre. Now, let's get with it and let's start making some money. Now, another question here. If only a small percentage of farms are organic, how can we feed the world? Why do we have to feed the world? Who gave us this concept that America needs to be the supplier of the world's food supply? Archer Daniels Midland, ConAgra, the Department of Agriculture. These are the socialist communist welfare dreamers that are out here at the top of the food chain, and they got you and me down here working to produce these commodities. They got a farmer out here in Montana producing wheat at $3.50 a bushel. And by the time that bushel of wheat reaches the supermarket and you buy a box of Wheat Thins that weighs 1 pound, it sells for $95 a bushel in a box of Wheat Thins. Just work out the numbers. Box of Wheat Thins are about $1.42. Now take $1.42 times 60. Let's try that. 1.42 cents times 60 pounds in a bushel. That's $85.20. So the $3.50 bushel of wheat in Montana, if that farmer got paid $7 a bushel, he'd end up a multimillionaire. He'd get rich. And if you added $3.50 to the total price, that's $85.20 plus $3.50 plus $85.20, you'd end up with $88.70. Well, gee, then the price of Wheat Thins might go up a nickel, huh? God, they might be $1.59. It would be insignificant at the retail price, and the wheat farmer would be getting double. He would be making a ton of money. The system that we've got now, this communist, socialist, centrally planned economy, instead of a free market economy, has bankrupted agriculture in the United States. This organic farming is as popular in Washington as AIDS, herpes, and VD because it's free market economy. It's just little guys out here on the street that are growing the produce and they're selling it. Let me tell you a little story here. In the Soviet Union, 25 years ago, they were having a hard time producing enough food to feed the people in Russia. Here's 8 million square miles of real estate and they can't feed their population, and it was about the size of the United States. So they came up with a novel idea. They said, what we'll do is we will give every one of these peasants, every one of these communal farms, these big state farms, we'll give each one of these guys a half an acre of land and let them use it any way they want after work. So they worked these guys 12 or 14 hours a day, and then they let them have a half an acre of land and they could grow anything they wanted on it. You know what happened? Well, out of 8 million square miles of real estate, all owned by the Soviet government, all owned by the Russian government, they produced 50% of the food consumed in the Soviet Union, and the other half of the food produced in the Soviet Union was produced on these one-half acre plots, part-time, spare time, by the workers on these communes or these communal farms. I got to thinking about that, and I said, you know, if you wanted to double the agricultural production of the Soviet Union, what I would do is give those peasants one full acre. They never did it, of course, because they're not interested in the free market. But anytime the free market works, it produces. And if you think that the world is too small and doesn't have enough room for all of the people and doesn't have enough capacity to produce food for everybody, you're right. Industrial, chemical, commercial farming cannot feed 6 billion people on planet Earth, as evidenced by the fact that that's what we're doing today, and 15,000 people a day starve to death each and every day. And that's not because there's a shortage of physical food. It's because the distribution, the wars, and the political problems that are created by the politicians cause the famine. If you eliminate government controls, get back to a free market, butt out and leave us alone, those peasants in the Soviet Union teach you quite a valuable story. Give us a half an acre, get off of our backs, and we'll produce half the food in the nation. Give us a whole acre and we'll produce enough food for everybody. And the Soviet government can then have the rest of the 8 million square miles in the country to do as they damn well please with it. The people of Russia only needed 1 acre per peasant to feed their entire nation. 2,400 square feet, boys and girls, will fit in your backyard in downtown Cleveland. On a 5,000-foot lot, you can build a house, and you still got 2,400 square feet of ground, and you can feed 6 people off of it handily. That produces $6,000 a year on 2,400 feet. All right, you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, Leviticus 19:19 tells us, "You shall not sow your field with mingled seed," and that's because hybrid seed and genetically modified organisms are a crime. They violate the law of God. And a study from Cornell University says that an increasingly popular commercial corn, genetically engineered to produce a bacterial toxin to protect it against corn pests, has an unwanted side effect. Its pollen kills monarch butterflies. And butterfly larvae in laboratory tests are also killed by this unwanted side bacterial toxin. The questions that Cornell left unanswered are even more telling. What else does it kill? Surely butterflies aren't the only unintended victims here. You know, poisons, after all, aren't too picky about who they kill, are they? Does it cause mutations? And if so, what plants, animals, or insects are being affected? When do you know if you're eating it? Is it in your grits? Is it in your cornbread? We know it turned up in Taco Bell tortillas once. If it's in a food product, will it be labeled as containing genetically modified organisms? Not in the United States. Will stores pull those products from the shelves like they did with tortillas after they got caught? Or will they just ignore the problem and look the other way? Well, so far, government, the Department of Agriculture, the Food and Drug Administration, the multinational seed, petrochemical, and food processing corporations have totally ignored critics of agricultural biotech, people who want the government to require labeling of food with the label genetically modified organism. Now, in this battle between your health and safety and the financial interests of the multinational seed and food processing companies, you lose unless you have your own non-hybrid, open-pollinated seed that is not genetically modified. Now, if you'd like to learn more about organics and genetically modified organisms and this thing of agriculture and farming and health, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining, best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call right now and order yours. Remember, it's free of charge. The number to call, 417-273-4967. And remember, my $100,000 class on how to make $100,000 on 25 acres or less is available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to my website, that's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's free. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about organic. Some questions and answers about organic. Well, if pesticides and other chemicals used in farming are so dangerous, then why are there not more deaths from them? Well, the answer to that is a body is actually very efficient at dealing with pesticides and other chemicals. And although high levels will undoubtedly lead to death, low levels are much more insidious. Overexposure to pesticides has been linked to a wide variety of modern illnesses, including infertility, chronic fatigue, allergies, irritable bowel syndrome, asthma, neurological disorders, hyperactivity, and depression. Many of these are chronic conditions that actually affect your life to a very serious degree. Now, in the United States, the number of agricultural workers who are actually killed by poisoning amounts to about, I think it's less than 100 a year. I think that's the last number I saw. Now, that's pretty significant. 100 people a year using these agricultural chemicals get killed. I remember one time we had a crop of artichokes. We had 5 acres of artichokes, and we bought a 50-gallon barrel of some kind of pesticide. I don't remember what the name of it was, but this back in the 1950s, early 1960s maybe, 60, 61, 2, 58, 91, long in there, forget exactly. But Anyway, the moral of the story is on the barrel, it's got this warning, and it says this stuff is pretty toxic. Now, you mix this stuff, I forgot it was pretty potent stuff. You'd mix something like, maybe a cup of it to 100 gallons of water, and it would spray 5 acres. It didn't take very much, but there was this deadly warning. It says, do not get this on your skin. Because the concentration of this stuff was so great, one drop of it on your skin could kill you. Now, this just a drop on your skin. This is concentrated stuff. Well, that's what they told us. So in the instructions, they said you gotta put on this helmet with a visor on it. And then when you open this barrel, you have to do it in a very careful way, and you got to wear these long rubber gloves. And then you've got to have protective clothing. You had to wear a jumpsuit. Now get this. I mean, this is like handling plutonium, for crying out loud. I looked at that warning, and I looked at the book, and I told the boss, I said, I'm not touching that crap. I didn't call it crap either. I told him I ain't touching it. So he did, but he was very careful with it. I don't remember exactly what the mixtures were. I'm not telling you it was a cup to 100 gallons, but it was something that was akin to that, you know, maybe a gallon to 100 or whatever it was. It was potent stuff, and they warned you plainly, do not get this on your skin. Now, of course, you got some Mexican who comes across the border, or some South American, you know, and he doesn't speak English, and he wants a job, and you're offering him $2 or $3 or $5 an hour, whatever it can be. This guy can't even read these warning labels. And do these farmers tell these undocumented aliens what they're getting involved in here? I kind of doubt it, you know that? I just really kind of doubt that anybody really cares about another human being, especially if he's undocumented and he doesn't speak the language and he's a Mexican. I mean, who cares about that? Well, that was my observation. Now, there's a little more insidious process that goes on here. People are dying from diseases like muscular dystrophy, multiple sclerosis, cancer, heart disease, and so on. You know, these are called degenerative diseases, diseases that we didn't even hear of. You never even heard these names 50 years ago. These diseases have come about at the very same time that we've been making all of these chemicals over the last 100 years, and we've been out here spraying these on our plants. Now, keep in mind that when we spray this toxic chemical on these artichokes, and it kills all the insects, that's our objective, what happens with this 100 gallons of spray that we spray on the artichokes the next time it rains? Well, the rain comes down, and it washes it off the plant and into the soil, doesn't it? All right? Now, when it rains on the soil through the winter and you get 10, 15 inches of rain, doesn't that water on the land run off? So the runoff water on the land, doesn't it carry those trace amounts of that toxic chemical that one drop on your skin threatens you with death? Doesn't it wash it off into the creeks and then into the rivers? And then don't the fish drink and breathe through that water, and don't they pick up that water and those chemicals and those trace amounts in their flesh? You know, that's what they tell us. And then they even go so far as to say, hey, look, ladies, you got to watch out. You don't want to eat tuna fish. You pregnant ladies out there, don't eat tuna fish. Have you heard that? Don't eat salmon. Why is that? Well, isn't that because of George Gordon spraying this terrible toxic chemical on his artichokes, which then was washed off by the rain? Doesn't a lot of this reach down into the water table and then show up in the well water of people miles and miles away from my 5 acres of artichokes? And you know, Dr. Lester up in Ontario, Oregon, he was a cancer specialist. And my wife had cancer and went to him, and he cured her cancer, and everything's going along fine. And he told her a little story here. He said, you know why you're sick, Jackie? You're sick because you drink this polluted water. And so he had a demonstration out in the waiting room of his clinic. And he had the water from Caldwell, Nampa, Boise, Mountain Home, Payette, Emmett, you know, all the towns that are around there in the Treasure Valley. So he just took the water out of the tap, each one of these towns, city water, right out of the tap, same stuff you drink and wash and bathe and wash your clothes in, and he had it tested. And what they did was they took a gallon of it and they boiled it down until there was just this residue left, and then they took the residue and they tested it. And they showed what the percentages were of the pesticides that are sprayed through the Treasure Valley, that's Boise, Idaho, that valley that runs from Boise over to Ontario. And, you know, there was the numbers on there, and it would say something like, you know, it's measured in parts per million. And so they would say, well, the water in Boise has 13 parts per million of DDT and 16 parts per million and 3 parts per million of this. And he had that all laid out. And he said, look, you people cannot drink this kind of water, these kinds of pesticides in the water, without getting sick, without getting disease. These are degenerative diseases. These poisons do not kill you like one drop on your skin will kill you. That kills 70 or 80 or 100 farm workers a year. But it kills multiple millions of Americans every year. But the death certificate never says killed by organophosphates, killed by DDT. It says you died from muscular dystrophy. You died from multiple sclerosis. You died from cancer. Now, what caused your multiple sclerosis, your Alzheimer's disease? these toxic pesticides. You know, it's the aluminum, the powdered aluminum that you're slathering on under your arms, which then is absorbed by the biggest organ of your body, your skin, and then it goes into your lymph system, causes lumps in your lymph system, and then causes malignancies and cancer in your breasts, ladies. And that's what you're doing. And furthermore, this isn't some wild off-the-wall tale I'm telling you because I had a nightmare last night. I'm just reporting to you what's being reported in Reader's Digest, U.S. News and World Report, Time and Newsweek magazine. Hell, the mainstream press is telling you this. In fact, I don't think I'm telling anybody anything that they don't already know or haven't already heard. It's just that, well, there's just nothing I can do about it. Well, there is something you can do about it. There are organic products that take the place of these chemical products, organic products that have been around for thousands of years. Ladies and gentlemen, thousands of years. You know, we have been dealing with stinky underarms. Coming up with a chemical solution in place of perfume. You know, perfume, frankincense and myrrh that you see talked about in the Bible. Those perfumes, they cost more money. And so Procter & Gamble comes along and says, gosh, we think that we can give you a stink or a smell that's just as good as frankincense and myrrh for a lot less money. We can give you powdered aluminum along with these chemicals over here, mix all this up together, put it in a wax base, put it in a neat little package, advertise it on television. We can sell that to these people out here by the millions and millions. Oh, the fact that this aluminum over here kills people, it gives them Alzheimer's disease, or it's a toxin, we don't need to tell them about that, do we? You people do not die from using Arid extra dry. You're dying from cancer. And of course, Procter & Gamble can sit back there and say, prove that this deodorant caused your cancer. You can't. But we do know that it's carcinogenic. We do know that the ingredients that's contained in this container causes cancer. We just can't prove that it caused your cancer. And I say, well, why take the chance? What's in it for you? All right, you're listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, the average American household today, making between $22,000 and $30,000 a year, spends about 16%, or about $5,000 of its income on food. Now, if you live in a more upscale household, $40,000 to $60,000 a year, you'll be spending about 10%, or about $6,000 on food. Now, about 12% of American households purchase organic produce. That's organic produce, and they buy from health food stores, organic produce salesmen, farmers markets, and so on. We know that translates into some 34 million customers coast to coast and border to border. And already there are more than 4,000 small organic farms producing this organic fruit and vegetables and meats on 25 acres or less. And they're making $100,000 a year or more serving this growing specialty market. And some of these farms are as small as 3 acres, and they're in every state in the union. Old Henry Kaiser summed it up nicely when he said of his business success, find a need and fill it. That was his slogan, find a need and fill it. Well, you know, here's a need that's just waiting to be filled. And the law school has a program to teach you how to make that $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. This is a 5-day school. It includes lessons on marketing, business plans, growing organic foods, and law. So why don't you call today and order my free 4-hour CD package. Remember, that's entertaining, informative, educational. It's free of charge. You can order it by calling direct 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the webpage, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email. Send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about organic. Let's give some credit where credit's due. Basically, I'm taking the questions, answers, the basic information from a neat little book called Organic Living in 10 Simple Lessons. I get a lot of calls here at the law school concerning organic and farming in the $100,000 class, and it just kind of fits right in. Since there are 34 million people in America today that are already buying organic, of course, the question arises, where am I going to buy it? Where am I going to get it? Why should I buy it? Where and why should I use it? Convince me. Well, let me give you an opportunity. Let me see if I can do that. Organic Living by Karen Sullen in 10 Simple Lessons, published by Barron's. Yeah, they've got a name on here, Barron's, and then it's published in China. I think you're going to find this in any bookstore. You can order it. I think it's worth the money. And there was one more factor that I wanted to share with you here. That's copyright 2001 Ivy Press Limited, in case you're looking for the. It says 2001 Ivy Press Limited. And it's put out by Barron's Educational Series Incorporated. 2001. Organic Living and 10 Simple Lessons is the name. Karen Sullivan, I think you can get it at Barnes & Noble. And let me tell you, while I'm on the advertising kick here, let me tell you about Acres USA. Now, Acres is the nation's preeminent biotechnology newsletter. That is, I shouldn't say biotechnology, I guess that's the Monsanto word. What do we want here? The Echo Update, that's it. It's the ecological newspaper of America. The number is 1-800-355-5313. It's about 48 pages, comes out once a month, and the price on it is, see, it's $27 a year. $48 for 24 issues, $66 for 36 issues. I subscribe because it's got all of the best information that money can buy in this country, in the United States. If you're out of the country, you got to pay them a little bit more. It's $32 a year, international. $27 a year. So for all of you people outside the country, call the number toll-free, 1-800-355-5313, and they'll tell you what the price is in your country. The law is heard in more than 70 countries around the world. I don't care where you are, there are articles in here that will show you how to raise and grow organic produce, where to buy organic seed, where to buy open pollinated seed, I guess I should say. And you can get a lead on where are you going to buy corn, where are you going to buy the products that are organic that you want to buy. Where are you going to sell them? I mean, if you were growing them, where would you want to sell them? What my school teaches is how to sell this stuff by contract to individuals. You need 100 customers who are going to spend $1,000 a year with you, and you want them on contract. So we combine that with my business and tax school. No sense putting or throwing our money away on taxes. No sense throwing our money away on insurance. Why don't you learn how to do this and do it the way our forefathers did it 100 years ago, with strict liability in place of limited liability, and as a property and property right, as opposed to a license or a privilege granted by the state. Instead of dealing in commerce, why don't we deal in property and property rights? I mean, these are kind of wild new concepts, you know, in the year 2004, but they're just common, everyday common sense ideas and concepts of 100 years ago. Your great-great-granddaddy wasn't spending all of his money on insurance and income tax and Social Security. Your income tax at 17% and Social Security at 16% take one-third of everything you create and produce. Add the other 12 taxes that go along with it, and it takes up to 74% of everything you create and produce, 76% in some cases. All right, the number is 1-800-355-5313. That's Acres USA. If there's anything better out there, send me a letter and tell me about it, would you? All right, here's another question on organics. Are organic antiperspirants better than ordinary brands of antiperspirant? Answer, it's actually better to avoid antiperspirants altogether because they inhibit natural sweating, which is one of the ways in which our bodies rid themselves of toxins. I would also be surprised if you could actually find an organic antiperspirant. Your best bet is an organic deodorant, which ensures that your sweat does not smell. These are better than conventional brands because they do not contain any chemicals that can cause health problems, such as cancer. So they come along, you know, people sweat. Sweat smells, and so we don't want that. So they come up here with this antiperspirant. Now your body is designed to perspire. Let's just test it for a minute. Your natural breathing every day consumes 1 quart of water. You know that because in the wintertime you can see your breath in the cold morning air, can't you? And what that is water vapor. Well, your lungs give off this water vapor as you breathe. And when you add up all that vapor over the course of a day, it's 1 quart per day. In addition to that, your body perspires, and the largest single organ in your body is your skin. And everywhere on your body, there are holes in the skin which are designed to let out this perspiration. It's designed to cool your body. But it's dual. It does more than just cool your body. It also dissipates toxins. So when you're taking in various toxins and poisons like DDT or something else, you can sweat them out of your body. This is why people go into hot tubs and sauna baths. That's why hot tubs and sauna baths have a health benefit to them. And that's because you sweat the toxins out of your body. You're actually getting these poisons out of your body. They come out either through your feces, they come out through your urine, or they come out through your perspiration. In other words, you've got 32 different fluids running around through your body. We'll call them fluids. Blood is a fluid, sweat is a fluid, saliva is a fluid, urine is a fluid. All of these fluids that flow around in your body, 32 of them, all have a function. They're all doing something. They're all running around in here making your body, which is the platform for your brain, which is what you are, giving you a mobile platform so you can move your brain around. And they all work together in here to keep your body functioning and working right. So when you take this antiperspirant and you plug up the pores, well, then your body can't get rid of those toxins. Well, since it can't get rid of those toxins, it has to circulate them through your body some more. And then you wonder why you have asthma. You know, you're wondering why it is you got a lump in your breast. Your body is plugged up, and your sweat, your perspiration, is just one of many ways that your body uses to detoxify itself, and you're plugging it up. Why don't you stick a plug up your rectum and plug that up for a week or 10 days and see how your health deteriorates? I mean, come on, guys. Why don't we use our heads? If you wouldn't stick a cork up your rectum, why would you stick antiperspirant under your arms? Now, the reason that your sweat stinks is because your body's full of poisons, and the poisons stink, not your perspiration. Once you clean your body out of its toxins, your perspiration will not smell. People with clean bodies and that aren't plugged up with toxins and poisons don't stink. Now, if your sweat stinks, then why don't you cover it up with perfume? That's what we've been doing for the last 5,000 years, you know, until Procter & Gamble came up with antiperspirant. Until Procter & Gamble said, look, if this stuff stinks, you know, if your feces stinks, then there's some people, of course, whose feces doesn't stink. But, I mean, if yours does, why don't you stick a cork up there, plug it up so it doesn't come out, and therefore it won't stink? I don't know. People come up with all kinds of weird ideas, don't they? Here's another question here in the last couple of minutes. If I cannot get organic, will green products do? Well, the answer to that is if the label says green and it goes on to describe why it is an environmentally friendly product, it'll contain fewer damaging chemicals than conventional brands. Now, the aim of organic living is to reduce toxic chemical consumption in any way possible, and legitimately, green products can help you do just that. But the term green does not mean organic. Organic is the Cadillac of food or antiperspirants. I shouldn't use the word antiperspirant, but rather a deodorant. And it's not just deodorants and antiperspirants. It's the chemicals that are contained in your food. Chemicals contained in your gasoline, for crying out loud, pollute the atmosphere, pollute the groundwater. There's all kinds of chemicals. I think there's 87,000 chemicals that have been developed in the United States since 1945. I think I saw that number somewhere the other day. 87,000. Now, I can't think of any of these chemicals that are not naturally produced, you know, in some kind of a natural form in a plant or an animal. That's good for you. When God develops plants and animals and they produce chemicals, you can just about bet that it's designed with you in mind. I'm not sure that Monsanto or DuPont or Orthogrow, Standard Oil, and Exxon have you in mind when they develop chemicals for sale in the marketplace. I think they've got Wall Street stock prices and the bottom line profit in mind, and to hell with you. All right, we're about out of time here. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, for more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And for more information, just go to the homeschooling page on my website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. We have our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. And remember that the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package to order yours. Just call the law school at 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. All right, there's the signal. It says my time is up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing. So until then, good night, friends.